Chapter 56. A Sharp Learning Curve. My high-pressure job, teaching textiles at the Darling Downs Institute of Advanced Education, continued. Even though I was a qualified teacher, this was my first foray into full-time teaching at a tertiary institution, and I was determined to give it my best shot. We, Sass the Wonder Dog, and I, were renting one half of a duplex on the east side of Toowoomba, and before long we had befriended the occupant of the other half. She was a travelling violin teacher with Education Queensland, and was actively involved with Toowoomba's vibrant chamber music scene. As a result, I was often invited to soirees and recitals, in both public and private spaces. Work-wise, the Institute's first-year textile students were fully engaged in the course material I was delivering. I recall only one whinge, a first-year student bailing me up to say, "Morley, we do more work in textiles than we do for all the other creative arts subjects combined." My reply, "Well, what are you here for? A holiday?" But it was a fair comment, as I was working them hard, and they were learning a lot, whilst the disgruntled second and third year students watched on from the sidelines. Their attitude was understandable, the result of their much loved former textile lecturer not being re-employed. After a while, some of the second year students came around, choosing to take advantage of the numerous textile skills I was offering, whilst others drifted away. Victorian sculptor, Adrian Morix, was the other newbie lecturer at the Institute that year. Occasionally, we compared notes, and our conversations were often accompanied with much head shaking, as we adjusted to the way this creative arts faculty was run, because it was so different to the various institutions he and I'd worked in, down south. In April that year, Adrian, wanting to make a splash, announced he was organizing a sculpture exhibition of first-year students' work. Their work would be displayed in the Creative Arts Gallery space. I thought little more about it, other than admiring his initiative, and looking forward to seeing work that was the result of the skills Adrian had taught his students. In the meantime, I continued to add more and more textile techniques to the first-year skill set. Some weeks later, the student exhibition opened with great brouhaha, and I was stunned to discover that 90% of the techniques the students had used for their sculptural pieces were from textiles. Once I'd recovered from the shock, I chuckled to myself. Here was irrefutable evidence that firstly, I was effective, and secondly, the students were utilizing skills that they had acquired in my classes to make art. Sweet success. In addition to a five-day-a-week teaching load, we, the creative arts lecturing staff, all practicing artists, were required to exhibit, as part of our terms of employment. That year a number of us exhibited at the Metro Arts Gallery space, in Brisbane. Later that year, I also mounted a solo show at the privately run Signatures Gallery, in Toowoomba. But, back to the Institute. The ground surrounding the textiles demountable became very muddy after rain, particularly the walkways to access the building. Little grass grew, and what there was of it, was worn away with the constant foot traffic, in and out of both sides of the building. Out of hours, I sweated blood, writing and illustrating lecture notes for each technique I taught, and the thought of my precious notes being trampled in the mud, or blowing around the campus, was totally unacceptable. In addition, I was reprimanded by the administration staff for putting too much printing through the photocopier. To deal with both concerns, I hatched a plan. To reassure the admin staff that the Institute's resources were not being wasted, I insisted that each student keep a folder containing a complete set of lecture notes to be submitted for final assessment. If not, they would fail textiles. Away from the Institute, I continued to do yoga twice a week, and persevered with a new twice-daily meditation practice. The yoga teacher lent me New Age books, and I gobbled them up. One of them, Faces of Findhorn, contained powerful black and white images of people living at an international, non-denominational, spiritual community, located east of Inverness, in northern Scotland. I was so moved by the images, and, on the spur of the moment, I decided I too would make my way to Findhorn. But, before I could leave Australia, I needed to tie off some loose ends. Sass and I returned to Goulburn only once that year. At the start of term break, Peter drove up to Toowoomba to collect us. It was a most unpleasant trip, as I sensed Peter was emotionally involved elsewhere, and that he'd have preferred to have his new sweetheart in the passenger seat, instead of me. For Peter's benefit, on the way south to Goulburn, we passed through Mung Dai, where, as a young man, fresh out of Scots College, Sydney, he'd jackarooed on a property, belonging to the officer family. When we got to the front gate, Peter was reluctant to drive in, and make himself known to whomever was now living there. I was surprised at his reluctance. After all, this was his sentimental journey, kicking over the traces of his youth. Our return to the Goulburn house was fraught. We had little to share, as is often the way when a relationship's in tatters. All that remained was hostility and resentment. With nothing resolved, I returned to Toowoomba, with Sass, drugged and caged in the bowels of two aircraft, Sydney to Brisbane, and then Brisbane to Toowoomba. And as a result, I don't know who was more traumatized. On my return, I sank into deep despair. Not knowing which way to turn, I sought professional advice. I made an appointment with a Lifeline counselor, who listened patiently, as I blubbered through my tale of woe. When I'd cried myself out, he said, "Are you aware that you're a victim?" "A victim? Who, me?" "No way." This counseling session was a wake-up call. As a result, Peter's days were numbered, but I wasn't quite sure at what point I'd ask him to vacate my house. In the meantime, my plans to visit the Findhorn community in Scotland were coming together. When I heard that a co-founder of the community, Dorothy McLean, was to give a weekend workshop at the Relaxation Centre in Brisbane, it seemed like the perfect opportunity to get answers to my myriad of questions. I signed up for the workshop that would focus on connecting with the energy of rocks and minerals. As a beginner meditator, I was completely out of my depth. What a disappointment. On my return to Toowoomba, I wondered if travelling to Scotland to experience the Findhorn community was such a good idea. During a midterm break, my yoga teacher invited Sass and myself to spend some time at her bush retreat on the New England tableland. I jumped at the chance because I desperately needed a break and a change of scene. The Severn River flowed through the block, where I spent 5 days meditating, reading, walking, talking, eating and sleeping. Sass enjoyed himself immensely. But, by day three the novelty was wearing off, what with the combination of crisp winter temperatures, overcast skies and little sunshine. I was relieved when the time came to return to abundant hot water and a warm bed. But time out in the bush had restored my equilibrium and re-energized me as I prepared for the next big push. To quit my lecturing job, return to Goulburn, evict Peter, and find a buyer for my house, before heading off to Bonnie, Scotland. On reflection. Lecture notes. Some of my students who went on to teach continued to use my lecture notes. For me, as a first-time lecturer, to have hit on this foolproof method to impart textile skills was so satisfying. All these years on, I'm comforted in the knowledge that my notes were and continue to be useful. Toowoomba Lifeline Counselor. I'm so grateful to the counselor for his life-changing observations. One visit did the trick, and provided the motivation I needed to take control of my situation. Next, I needed to summon all my strength to extricate myself from the exploitative relationship with Peter. Peter Bluey. In hindsight, Peter's relentless search for affirmation from women was a blessing in disguise. Yes, My feelings had been hurt by his recurring infidelity, but thankfully, his emotional focus was elsewhere during our messy breakup. Even though he made a half-hearted attempt to pull some legal skullduggery, his efforts were quickly quashed by my high-powered Sydney lawyer. But I sensed his heart wasn't in it, possibly because he was wanting to conceal his true colors from his newest partner. Student response to my textile course. Towards the end of the last term of 1983, the first-year students were asked to list their preferred subjects for their second year of study. To my utter amazement, 58 of 60 students wanted to continue with textiles. High praise indeed for the course I'd created and delivered. But the logistics of coping with 60 new first years, plus 58 second years, in the existing space, with the existing facilities, would have been a stretch.